Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Now, Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. Here's your host, KMOX Health Editor, Fred Bottomer.
Hi there, and thanks for joining me again today. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about coming up, including an update on that COVID-19 vaccine trial about to get underway at St. Louis University. We'll also talk about face coverings and what's the best mask to wear, and we'll find out about the possible dangerous combination of coronavirus and influenza, which we may be seeing soon. But first, let's get the show started the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
So bring us up to date. Where do we stand right now with local COVID cases?
Well, in the St. Louis community, the metro region, it's been steady. I mean, we still get a growth of new cases, but it seems to be pretty consistent. It certainly isn't getting to that, you know, kind of high growth rate that we had probably, kind of in mid-July that was kind of concerning for all of us. The hospitalizations have been steady. The acuity, meaning that the degree of how sick people are, is probably a little bit higher, and there's been some more ICU admissions across the region. But in my own facility, we have about, it's anywhere from 5 to 10% of our admitted patients are COVID or suspected COVID patients, and that just seems to be kind of the steady rate, up and down every single day, but for the most part, pretty consistent for the last 4 weeks or so, honestly.
This past week, Russia claimed to have the first successful COVID-19 vaccine. Here's what Dr. Anthony Fauci said about that.
Having a vaccine and proving that a vaccine is safe and effective are two different things. We have half a dozen or more vaccines. So if we wanted to take the chance of hurting a lot of people, or giving them something that doesn't work, we could start doing this, next week if we wanted to. But that's not the way it works.
Dr. Buchholz, what's your take on that new Russia vaccine?
Well, I absolutely agree. And for the record, it's not proven to be safe or effective or provide immunity. None of that information's there. I always take a step back, where in healthcare and people's health in general, particularly when faced with pretty severe illness. So something like COVID, where there's, a risk of death, depending on the situation. Cancer is another area where this is rife. There's people that are vulnerable, and there's more than enough people out there to take advantage of that vulnerability. And you just got to be very, very careful when you see these things. And for that same purpose, you don't know if the benefit of the vaccine is there, and you don't know what the harms are. I think the whole thing just kind of coming out of Russia just seems very, very suspicious. How is where they have less of a science infrastructure of, the rest of Europe, of the United States, of China, frankly, which has, really amped up their infrastructure for doing research. How does Russia kind of pull this out of the hat? And it just doesn't jive. I think anybody that's looking at this with any degree of logic is suspicious, and they ought to be. And I certainly have concerns. And again, I think, we got to make sure we do this right, because you never know what causes harm. And that's always a worst. And, again, our first mantra is first do no harm. And it's that simple. So, yeah, I'm incredibly suspicious and I'm concerned, and I hope something bad does not come out of this.
Coming up, we're going to talk with Dr. Sharon Frey at St. Louis University's Center for Vaccine Development, which is beginning a trial on the Moderna vaccine. Right now, we're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, we've been hearing differing views about whether or not you can be reinfected with COVID-19. We've got opposing views, both from Harvard. One is with the legendary public health expert, Dr. William Hazeltine.
This virus comes back and reinfects exactly the same person. It's not like polio. You get it and you're protected for life. It is a virus that can fool your immune system, and we're still trying to struggle to learn what that means for vaccines and what that means for the epidemic. But we know it can come back.
Another public health expert, Dr. Michael Mina at Harvard, has a different take on reinfection.
I think it's very important to be more cautious about that kind of statement. On the one hand, it is likely that people can get reinfected. But we have to look at what it means when somebody gets reinfected. And most people, upon reinfection, will probably have already built up in immunological memory a protection from their first infection. So even if you get reinfected, the same as we often see with common cold viruses, then we should see a less severe disease and potentially a totally asymptomatic disease. So reinfection is a normal process with viruses like this. But the idea is that our immune memory and our protection will kick in on those reinfections, and we will not have as severe disease.
Dr. Buchholz, what's your take on reinfection?
Well, I think the biggest part is, you know, we still don't know, and there's a lot to learn about this in that regard. You know, you hear these reports. I mean, there's a report out of China that a couple of people that had coronavirus early on recovered from their disease and then got a repeat test and it's positive. You know, I think the important thing to delineate with that is, you know, when we do this test, all the tests we're doing right now are really looking for genetic material. So essentially RNA, which is kind of a product off of DNA, but at any rate, it's genetic material. And you know, what they're detecting is that. Now, does that mean it's active virus it's infecting, or is it just that the material is still there for reasons, again, we don't quite understand? And they're right. I mean, coronavirus is there's a lots of different subspecies of coronavirus. It's what caused a lot of the common colds. You know, all of us are aware of the fact we get sick multiple times a year with a cold, and a lot of those are coronaviruses. Whether it's the same or a different coronavirus is also a relative unknown. So all of these things play a role. You know, it's the same thing going back with the vaccine research. We know with particularly, like, for instance, the Moderna vaccine, we know it elicits an immune response. That's pretty obvious, and that's testable. Does that immune response confer a long-term protection from COVID? We don't know. That's why we have to do these trials and find out. But even with the new trials that are being done, including my own institution, we're just going to know in the short term whether it works. We don't know if it confers immunity, say, 2, 3, 5 years from now. You need time to do that kind of research. The only way to know that is to see what happens over time. So, you know, it just shows, you know, for all of our technology and advanced scientific research out there's still a lot that we don't know about this and about how the immune system works. And, you know, clearly it looks like with COVID, there's some degree of what our immune system does as a product of being infected with COVID that describes how sick we get. And so there's a lot of work to be done. And you just heard two, you know, known experts kind of give totally different opinions, not because one's right or one's wrong. They're just making their best guess based on the information that's available to them. And that's completely understandable because nobody really knows for certain.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks for your time again. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Fred.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up, we'll check in with SLU's Center for Vaccine Development and find out about its Phase 3 COVID-19 vaccine trial that's about to get underway. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Researchers at St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development are recruiting participants for their vaccine study involving the Moderna vaccine. Here to talk with us about that is SLU Care's Dr. Sharon Frey. Dr. Fry is the clinical director of St. Louis University's Center for Vaccine Development and principal investigator of the Moderna trial at SLU. Dr. Fry, good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Fred, for having me.
So tell us about this vaccine study. What are you going to be working with?
This is the first efficacy trial with a COVID vaccine or SARS-CoV-2 vaccine that is going to be studied in the United States. People have heard a lot about this study on the news. This is a vaccine study that will evaluate a vaccine made with mRNA. mRNA is the instruction manual that allows the body to make the spike protein, which is the small piece of the virus that causes an immune response. It is also the same part of the virus to which neutralizing antibodies are made. So how does this work? The vaccine is made of mRNA. It's injected into the upper arm, into the deltoid muscle. The muscle cell takes the instructions and makes the spike protein. Then the body makes an antibody response against the protein, which is hopefully protective in the future should somebody see the SARS-CoV-2 virus or COVID virus.
This is kind of a new way to go about a vaccine, isn't it?
This is an absolutely new platform for making vaccines. There are no vaccines on the market made from mRNA. However, this mRNA has been used to test other vaccines and is still in the process of testing other types of vaccines. One of the things that's nice about mRNA is that it's very easy to produce and can be mass-produced quickly, providing millions of vaccines to individuals.
And this is the Moderna vaccine trial?
Correct. This is the Moderna vaccine trial. Again, this is an efficacy trial, and this trial will try to enroll 30,000 people across the United States at approximately 89 sites. It is also the first of several vaccine studies that will be partially supported by the National Institutes of Health.
How many volunteers are you seeking there for this study?
We will be hoping to enroll several hundred volunteers into this study at the St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development.
And the Moderna vaccine trial, that's one that we've heard Dr. Fauci talk about in the past, isn't it?
That's correct. People are very excited about this vaccine because it is made with mRNA. Earlier studies look really good for the development of an immune response that looks like it might be protective. I do want to say that the reason we're testing this vaccine is because we do not know if it works or not. So that is the question we're trying to figure out with this large efficacy trial.
We're talking with Dr. Sharon Fry. Dr. Fry is the clinical director of SLU's Center for Vaccine Development and principal investigator of the Moderna trial at St. Louis University. Dr. Fry, how does the trial work?
What we do in the study is try to evaluate the efficacy of the vaccine. That means we will compare people who receive placebo against people who receive actual vaccine. What will we look at? We will look at how many people in the placebo group develop COVID compared to the number of people in the vaccine group who develop COVID. If more people in the placebo group develop COVID disease compared to those in the vaccine group, then we can start thinking about, is this vaccine efficacious or not? It depends on the number of people in each group, but if there's a high number of people in the placebo group who develop COVID compared to a lower number in the vaccine group, then we can say the vaccine is efficacious and we can determine how efficacious is it. Does it work 90% of the time or 70% of the time or 60% of the time? And that's what we'll be studying with this trial. We also are interested to know, can the vaccine also lessen severe disease in individuals who might otherwise be hospitalized? Can it prevent hospitalization? Can it prevent the development of very severe disease?
What kind of volunteers are you seeking?
We would like to enroll people who are 18 years of age and older who are at risk for developing COVID because they're out and about in the community, going to work, maybe going shopping, doing errands. Maybe they have children going to school. And also, it depends on what their jobs are, because there are certain jobs where people are exposed to more individuals. We also are very interested in looking at groups that suffer from severe disease. These are the elderly, 65 years of age and older, people who are younger with comorbidities such as disease, heart disease, lung disease. We are also very interested in having a nice representation of people from across our entire community. We are very concerned about people who are disadvantaged, who also suffer higher incidence of disease and also suffer from more severe disease.
How safe is this trial for volunteers?
What we know so far about the early vaccine studies that have been done with this product is that there have been no serious adverse events from the vaccine. In other words, no one has suffered a serious problem because they received the vaccine. We know this vaccine, like every other vaccine, does have side effects. That's to be expected. And so we will be following people very closely to see what kind of side effects they might have, and are they just mild, last a couple of days, or are they more moderate or severe in nature? So far, no one has had a severe adverse event or side effect to this vaccine who were tested in early phase 1 and 2 trials. We also have a significant safety oversight of this trial to make sure the vaccine study is being done properly and that people's safety is being evaluated literally on a daily basis.
So there's no live virus involved in this study?
You cannot develop COVID disease from being in this study and receiving this vaccine. The vaccine does not have any live virus in it, and we do not expose you to COVID. If a person becomes exposed to COVID and develops COVID, they do that because of their own behavior, either at home, in the workplace, out in public. We do want people to understand that we do not know if this vaccine works. That's why we are testing it. And people should do what they would normally do to protect themselves, such as wearing a mask, practicing social distancing. We know that people don't always do that because they might be in a hurry or they are just with their friends and they think they're safe. And this is how people become infected.
What's the timeline like for this, Dr. Fry?
This study will enroll quickly. I believe sponsors would like us to enroll everybody within an 8-week period. We'll see if that happens or not. Each individual, however, if they enroll into the study, will be involved in the study for 25 months or approximately 2 years. People will receive a vaccination on day one, and then 28 days later, they'll get a second vaccination. People will be followed very closely after each of those vaccinations, and then for a period of 2 years. We are interested to see who develops COVID and who does not. And so if we think people might have COVID, we will bring them into the vaccine center and test them. And if they're positive, we will follow them over time.
If someone wants to volunteer, what do they need to do?
If people want to volunteer in this study, we would like for them to go to our website, which is basically vaccine.slu.edu, or call the Vaccine Center at 314-977-6333.
Dr. Fry, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Fred, so much.
SLU Care's Dr. Sharon Fry is the clinical director of St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development and principal investigator of the Moderna trial at SLU. Coming up, we'll find out what lies ahead for this fall and winter, as we are likely to see both coronavirus and the flu throughout the area at the same time. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Health officials are stepping up their advice to get the flu vaccine this year because of the coronavirus pandemic. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Peter Montgomery. Dr. Montgomery is a family medicine physician with the SSM Health Medical Group. Dr. Montgomery, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dr. Montgomery, I wanted to get your thoughts about the flu and COVID-19 and those who are saying it could possibly be a really bad combination this fall. But first, I wanted you to hear some comments from Dr. Paul Offit. Dr. Offit is the director of vaccine education at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. Here's what he told CNN.
I can guarantee you this, that this coming year, we will have an epidemic of influenza, as we have for every year. And last year, influenza caused about 780,000 people to be hospitalized, 60,000 people to die, and 50 million people to be infected. What happened with that epidemic, seasonal epidemic last year, is it started as always starts, November, December, peaks in January, February, starts to come down in March and April. March and April was when SARS-CoV-2 came into this country and started killing people. So it was sequential. We had flu epidemic, then we had the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic. This year, what is most likely to happen is those two things are going to happen at the same time. We are woefully unprepared for
that. Dr. Montgomery, let's break that down a little bit.
Those are similar concerns I hear with all the other doctors or my patients are asking me the same question.
Yes. Yeah, so what are you hearing?
Well, some good news. I mean, face mask social distancing cuts down all diseases. I've treated like one sinus infection this month. I mean, I'm family practice. We get acute stuff all the time. And, you know, people often call in for things, and that's way down. In Australia, which they're in their winter right now, and they're having an 80% reduction in influenza cases. You know, because of the social distancing, the mask wearing, it cuts down everything. It's like the rising tide, you know, raises all ships. It also lowers all ships. When we first started out with the COVID clinics here that we're running with SSM, I was participating with them. We were checking everybody for strep and flu. We didn't yet have the COVID test. And when that came in, we added that. And a lot of people coming in, they had the flu, they had strep. And so we were catching those. And so I don't think there's any lack of testing. People say, oh, there's less because of less testing. Now, when you come in and you got a fever, we're checking you for COVID and strep and influenza, things we can do rapid tests for and then we have good treatments for. So I think hopefully if we keep up the plans we're doing with the social distancing and masking, we should have it hopefully a lighter case. But there's no excuse to not get your influenza vaccine. It drastically cuts down the death rate, especially in the people over 65. People over 65 are 10 times more likely to die from the flu than someone in the 50 to 60 range. And people in 50 to 60, especially if they have health conditions, are 10 times more likely to die from the flu for people less than 50. So the older you are, the worse COVID is. The older you are, the worse the flu is. Please get your influenza vaccine.
So judging from what we're seeing going on in Australia, you're hopeful it might be a more mild season here this year?
Yes, hoping for it, but we have to prepare for it not being that way. So I think we should, there's no excuse to not get your flu shot this year. And so I meant to mention the good Australian numbers as a sign that social distancing and mask wear is decreasing the disease of influenza there. It's also decreasing the COVID there and here. So I think we should keep doing that. Every year, you know, the kids go back to school, and I've forever called it the back to school bug. You know, the kids spread some germs to each other, to the teachers, to to the parents, the coworkers, and it really gets going. We really need to take, you know, extra precaution here for the next month as this new, you know, group of people who have not been hanging out with each other start hanging out with each other. There will be increased cases. Kids tend to do well, you know, with the COVID from the data we've seen, you know, very few cases of hospitalizations or fatalities. But I think we need to keep our guard up.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Montgomery. Dr. Montgomery is a family medicine physician with the SSM Health Medical Group. Dr. Montgomery, what's the timeline like for the flu in the St. Louis area?
Well, I mean, the flu is actually a year-round disease. It just really drops off, but never goes to zero anywhere. And it starts picking up in September. I will get a few random cases as we do group sporting events. You know, I'm talking in a normal year, you know, football and soccer and all the things we do in the fall and all the parties. And then we have Halloween, we have Thanksgiving, we have Christmas. You know, we keep stirring that pot. So we need to be careful at these events, and especially this fall. And then by January, February, March, we have the peaks. You know, flu A and B peak, usually different times, but they were really heavy when COVID hit. So we had emergency rooms full of people with influenza. Same time, we were worried about COVID. So again, if everybody keeps social distancing, everybody gets their flu shots, we'll have less people in the emergency room with influenza, and therefore also less people in with COVID, hopefully. And imagine you're in a car wreck, or you have a heart attack, or you have some major medical problem. You want to go into an emergency room that's not swamped with sick people. You want to, you know, so by everybody getting their flu shots, everybody doing what they can, we're preventing unnecessary deaths from treatable diseases. We got to think beyond just the infectious disease. By you getting your flu shot, you're not sick with the flu. You're not distracting the healthcare or overloading the healthcare system so they can take care of the person in the bed next to you who's having a heart attack.
Earlier in this pandemic, a lot of people, a lot of adults, a lot of parents might have been afraid to take their kids to their doctor's office to get a vaccination, that sort of thing. That's no longer a concern, is it?
We are really, really careful about asking people to wear masks, checking them for temperatures. The first thing the hospitals did is they rearranged the corridors within the hospital. Like, these are where the suspicious of COVID or positive COVID patients go, and everybody else goes over here. We're very careful about traffic and safety of the people who are there for a non-contagious condition. We don't want to be mixing things up. You know, so if there's a setting for flu shots being set up there, taking extra precautions, make sure that you're safe to get the shot, and other people are safe from you, too. You know, so it works both ways.
When do you think flu shots will become available this fall?
Oh, it used to be that they're all started to be available in October, and they keep moving it up because to get enough people vaccinated, you got to spread the time frame of vaccination. So I think you're going to be hearing about it early September that flu shots are available. And as soon as you hear about it, get it. Lung specialist friend of mine's, and they have their people with COPD, people on oxygen, people over 65, even get a second influenza vaccine in December or January just to make sure that they got a really good dose of it. And the flu vaccine is highly effective. In other words, it makes antibodies for you. It does a great job of decreasing how many people get the disease. It decreases deaths. It decreases hospital overload. And it can also decrease your stress and your fear factor of worrying about it. So I think it's a very good thing that people get it as soon as it's available.
And dispel some of those false notions about the flu shot.
Well, I mean, you know, vaccines do have side effects. You will get achy and sore. I would not call it really a side effect. That's an effect. That's it doing what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to trigger your immune system. It's supposed to give you a little low-grade fever. That's it working. What I run into is it's also what I call the back-to-school bug is going around at the time we're giving everybody the vaccine. So people get the vaccine. 2 days later, they get a runny nose and sore throat from the other virus that's going around the community at the time, and they go, oh, see, I got the flu from the flu shot. I'm like, no, the flu hits you like a truck. I mean, you are instantly, suddenly run over, sore, body aches. There is no mild flu. I've never seen a mild case of the flu. If you just got a runny nose, sniffle, and you're able to function, you don't have the flu. You know, so a lot of people, you know, they like connecting this happened to that happened, and it's not always that way. So it gets a little confusing with that. But we've been using the flu shot for decades. It's very, very, very effective. And the side effects are just the side effects of your immune system kicking in, doing what it's supposed to do.
Dr. Montgomery, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Dr. Peter Montgomery is a family medicine physician with the SSM Health Medical Group. Coming up, we'll find out about a new Duke University study about the effectiveness of face coverings. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. How protective are those masks that so many of us are wearing these days during this pandemic? A new study took a look at that. Here to talk with us about it is Dr. Thomas Seiler, Dr. Seiler is a sleep medicine physician with SSM Health Sleep Services and medical director at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles. He's also board certified in pulmonology. Dr. Seiler, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Hi, Fred. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks a lot for asking. Wanted to talk with you about this Duke University study that found, among other things, that wearing neck gaiters may be worse than wearing no face covering at all. It was something that the chief medical officer for the SSM Health Medical Group, Dr. Alexander Garza, who's also the head of the St. Louis Metropolitan Pandemic Task Force, brought up during his weekly news conference on Wednesday.
And the authors go through a lot of work to say, hey, this isn't exhaustive for all neck gaiters. This is the one that they tested, and clearly materials are different for different neck gaiters. The rationale behind this is if this neck gaiter was allowing air to go through, then it was taking those large droplets that people exhale and breaking them up into smaller particles that could then be suspended. Take that for what it's worth. Again, this wasn't an exhaustive study of all materials used to make gaiters. And we'll have to see what more evidence comes out of that. But just to be on the safe side, you may want to think twice about using that type of mask or seeing what type of material it's made out of to make sure it's being effective.
Dr. Seiler, let's talk a little bit more about this study, and we'll get to neck gaiters in a minute. But first, hit the highlights here. What's the main message of this study?
Okay, well, the purpose of the study was to evaluate a technique to assess mask performance. And basically what the investigators were looking at was to see how many droplets came through a mask in normal speech, and that's what they looked at. Each mask was tested 10 times in the study, and they had an individual say a short phrase of normal speech, and then they measured the number of droplets that came through each mask in 40 seconds. They tested a total of 14 different masks. The N95 masks, such as used in hospitals for healthcare providers, had close to zero droplets that got through the mask. Surgical masks were less than 5% compared to no mask. Most of the cotton masks that people are using around the community had less than 20% of the droplets go through the mask. A bandana had about 55% of the particles went through the bandana type mask. The surprise was that they used a fleece gaiter, which is one of the masks that goes around the neck that Dr. Garza was talking about. And actually there were more droplets recorded going through the gaiter mask than with no mask. They theorized that was possibly because the gaiter mask was breaking bigger droplets into smaller ones. So the investigators implied that bandanas and gaiters were ineffective, and that information has been on the news wires over the last week or so. The data from the study shows, however, that the bandanas reduced the droplets by 45% compared to no mask, which, although not as effective as the hospital-grade and cotton masks, is still much better than using no mask. Now, again, as Dr. Garza mentioned, the results only apply to the masks that were tested. For example, a gaiter of a different material may perform better. So that's the caveat that Dr. Garza was speaking about in the conversation that he had on Wednesday.
So N95 masks are the best, but we hear it's best to leave those to the medical professionals.
Correct, just because of the supply. The other thing that everyone needs to understand with this is this study is looking at how many droplets get through a mask. So this is using a mask to prevent spread of COVID-19 from one individual who's infected to somebody who is not. It does not address how effective a mask is at preventing a droplet from getting into a subject if they're wearing a mask for protection. So it only addresses one side of the coin. The other thing is that it only addresses normal speech. And the highest viral load that comes out of somebody who's infected with COVID-19 is if they sneeze or cough. And this study did not address sneezing or coughing. They did mention that one reason they were developing this technique is so that further studies could be done to look at other situations. And I would suspect that the group from Duke will be coming out with some more information down the road, maybe addressing some of these other situations and give us more knowledge in this area.
So the next most protective mask would be the surgical mask. Those are the light blue ones I think a lot of people wear when you go to a grocery store. Those do a pretty good job, right?
Yes, sir. They do.
And cloth masks are the ones that we would be making at home. People are sewing those.
Correct, or like the logo masks that a lot of the places are selling, like you can get a Blues mask or a Cardinals mask. The masks made out of the cotton material that are usually 3 or 4 layers thick with ear loops on them. Those are pretty effective as well.
Let's talk about layering. How important is layering in the mask that we wear?
Well, it's a compromise between being able to breathe through the mask and having the mask be effective. And most of the masks that are effective have 3 or 4 layers of material. It also matters what material it's made out of, because the surgical masks are made out of fairly light material, but it's material that's got a very tight weave, so it prevents particles from getting out of the mask. And that's actually what those masks are designed for, is for example, a surgeon using that type of mask in the operating room to protect a patient during surgery from, you know, getting any organisms that might be in the surgeon's breath into a wound while they're doing an operation. So that's what those types of masks are designed. But the homemade mask, it's better to have, you know, 2 to 4 layers of material in the mask to make it more effective.
And your message for people that are wearing the bandanas or neck gaiters is what?
So as a lung specialist, I have a lot of patients that have trouble breathing. They have very severe lung disease. And those are the types of patients that sometimes struggle if they have to wear a mask that fits fairly tightly. In those patients, I tell them that we've been recommending that they use bandanas. In this particular study, they used a bandana that was folded over once, so it was 2 layers. You potentially could put, you know, 2 bandanas on top of each other. But with those patients, they can breathe with a bandana on. They can't breathe as well with a surgical mask or a cloth mask. So in those patients, I tell them, even though a bandana is not as effective as these other types of devices, it's still more effective than wearing nothing. And I think that's the important message to get out to the community.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Seiler. Dr. Seiler is a sleep medicine physician with SSM Health Sleep Services and medical director at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles. He's also board certified in pulmonology. Dr. Seiler, let's talk about face shields. What do you think about face shields?
Well, one of the things that there is some concern about is there have been some reports of transmission through the eyes. And a mask will not protect your eyes because it doesn't cover your eyes. So the purpose of a face shield is not only to keep things away from the lower part of the face, but also to protect the eyes. And in hospitals where they're dealing with known COVID patients, masks are standard equipment with an N95 mask underneath to try to prevent spread through the mucous membranes in the eyes. As far as wearing a mask in the community, it can be somewhat protective, but most of the masks, they're far enough away from the face that they're really not going to prevent droplets from getting into the nose and mouth, or prevent a lot of droplets if you cough or sneeze from coming out of the mouth. So they're not. If you're going to wear a face shield, you should also be wearing a mask underneath it.
Dr. Seiler, thanks a lot for your time. Tell me again your main message for people when it comes to mask wearing.
The main message is masks and social distancing and washing your hands are the 3 things that help prevent the spread of this virus. The United States' trajectory on this virus is terrible compared to the rest of the world. And one of the big differences is in the rest of the world, many more individuals are wearing masks to keep other people safe in addition to themselves. And I think that's the most important message, is we need to stop this virus and slow it down, and that's the only way it's going to happen until we have a vaccine.
Dr. Seiler, thanks for talking to us. Always good to have you on.
Thank you, Fred.
Dr. Thomas Seiler is a sleep medicine physician with SSM Health Sleep Services and medical director at SSM Health St. Joseph Hospital in St. Charles. He's also board certified in pulmonary disease. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the radio.com app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join us again next week at the same time for another edition of Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Baseball is back. And so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.